On this episode of Big Boys Don't Cry, we discuss the 2014 film Dear White People. You don't have to have seen the film to enjoy the podcast, but if you do proceed and listen without having seen the film, you should just be aware that we discuss elements of the plot and some things will be spoiled for you. Enjoy. Hey, there you are.
Hello.
How's it going? You can see my face dead on this time. How's that?
I can see your face.
Can you?
Excellent.
Can you hear me? Right.
I can hear the drums, Fernando.
I never know what the next line is. It's just, can you hear the drums, Fernando?
It's then, can you hear the bass, Fernando? But it's all about a sound check at a gig.
Yeah, and then, can you hear the hi-hat, Fernando?
I'd like a little more vocals in my monitor, please.
There is something in the air that night. It's feedback night, Fernando. Feedback night. That's where all the musicians go to get feedback on their work.
That's exactly right. They turn up and say, please be kind to me.
Yeah. Please be kind to me, Fernando, executor of all musical decisions.
He is the person who decides who can be in a band and who can't be in a band. He comes around to every band and is like, you're allowed to be in a band. You're not. Go away.
Yeah. And if every musician has to show their card that says that they've got the Fernando seal of approval. You know how in the 90s the Nintendo games used to have the Nintendo seal of quality on them? It's kind of like that.
Yes.
You got to put that on your guitars.
Exactly. I always remember that one of the Nintendo game magazines in the 90s, their mascot was a seal, as in the seal of approval.
Ah, I see what they did there.
Who kind of ran their mailbox for letters in and things like that. I can't remember which magazine it was, but yes, it was an actual seal.
I'm glad that Seal found time to do that, as that was the peak of his popularity following the release of the song Kiss from a Rose, of course.
He was spending so much time playing Nintendo games.
Baby, I compare you to a Nintendo seal of approval. That was the first draft. You know, it's like, you know, when you're an artist and you're starting out, you have to have a day job. So, but while you're at your day job, you're thinking about this kind of stuff. And his
exactly.
day job was replying to Nintendo fan mail. And he'd write songs while he was doing it.
And that's how we got such great hits as Crazy. Actually written about being crazy about Nintendo games.
Yeah. It's all about Mario Kart. Oh, Seal. He seems like a nice gent.
He does.
Do you want to talk about climate change? Do you want to talk about how fucking weird it is that I went out without a coat today and yesterday at lunchtime it was like 20 degrees in London?
Yeah.
How's it been down there?
It has been very hot down here as well. It's been very mild. Of course, there is a difference between climate and climate. But it is certainly a little bit disconcerting that we're having such a strong heat wave in February.
Yeah, all the flat earth types are all like, oh, it's not climate, it's just weather. You don't understand the difference, thereby proving that they actually don't understand the difference.
And of course, there is a big difference between climate and weather. And so that's why when people turn around and say, oh, it's really cold today, so much for climate change. It's like, no, that's not how it works, dude.
Yeah. You want to look at stuff like the global temperature, but it's all fake anyway.
President Trump, that is not how it works. I'm sorry.
Who says you can measure the temperature of the Earth anyway? What, do you have a giant thermometer that's as big as the planet? No, it can't be done.
Exactly. It's all fake. It's all smoke and mirrors. Literal smoke and literal mirrors.
Yeah. So whilst I'm glad that, you know, it was actually nice to go out without a coat today, it's actually kind of worrying and it's like you can't enjoy it, you know?
Yeah. And again, you know, we've had heat waves in February before and everything like that. Pay more attention to what scientists are telling you, which is that everything is bad and we're all going to die unless we change things drastically, change things quicker than most elections would allow us to change things.
And if they're not telling you that, they're a fake
doomed.
Scientist.
We are all doomed, I'm afraid.
Yes, I do believe that's true. So, you know, we've got films and stuff, but I'm trying to be more positive. I think in the last few episodes, especially as we've been talking about stuff like Brexit and what a fucking shit show it is, I decided that I want to be more positive, you know? I want to stop ranting about trains and Brexit and all the stupid stuff, and I want to try and find positive things. And, you know, I know that sounds kind of cheesy, but that's true. So it was still a nice thing today. I still enjoyed that.
Yes.
And my trains were all on time today, so there you go.
Oh, there we go.
For once. And I submitted a claim for the one that was off, not on time the other day, and they're going to give me £4 for it, so
mate, there you go. Mate, that is nearly enough to buy a coffee.
Yeah, well, not in London. £12 it is, £12. I get in every morning on the train, and I'm walking along the South Bank, and all the Cockneys are all lined up with their stalls. Get your coffee, £12 a latte! Because some of them are northern as well, you know. It's a very diverse place.
It's lots of cultures intertwine in London.
Yeah, but it's still predominantly dominated by Cockney culture, of course.
Of course.
Which I'll be exploring in my forthcoming film, Dear Cockney People.
Dear Cockney People. So I'm very pleased that since you have a newfound je de vivre about finding positives in everything, that I chose a film that is about institutionalized racism.
I said I was trying. That doesn't mean I have a joie de vivre. That's I would not go that far.
Not quite that far yet.
Yeah, you know, it's more like the five stages of grief, and I'm past denial, but what's the next one? Anger?
Furiousness? Is it anger, bargaining, acceptance?
Farting. I can only ever remember it from The Simpsons. The first is denial. No way, because I'm not dying. But then I can't remember what the next one is. The one where Homer sits in the chair and he thinks he's going to die because he's eaten some fugu fish.
Indeed.
That's one of my very favourite episodes. But as we just... I think, was it on this podcast or was it on my other podcast last week where I talked about how I think my favourite Simpsons moment ever is when it's Robert Goulet and he turns up to the Treehouse Casino. And Bart's running the Treehouse Casino, and Nelson picks him up, brings him in, and he says, "Is this really the casino? I think I should call my manager." And Nelson says, "Your manager says for you to shut up." And he goes, "Vera said that?"
Yeah, that's a good moment. It's a really good moment.
Actually, this may not have been a podcast. This may have just been me actually having a conversation with someone. It's like I can't even remember conversations unless they happen with a microphone in front of me.
I didn't realize actual conversations happened anymore. I thought it was all podcasts.
Yeah, you could be forgiven for thinking that anyone under the age of, what, I don't know, 40 has to experience all of their conversation online now.
Indeed, indeed.
And that definitely means podcasts are not phone calls, because as we know, phone calls are the work of the devil and I will not stand for them.
Well, I think the big difference is that phone calls are a spontaneous thing and everyone hates that kind of spontaneous human contact.
Yeah.
If you don't, I am very suspicious of you. Whereas yep. With a podcast, you've got it prearranged. You've got a time you're going to do it. And that is much better.
That's exactly right. I need everything in my life to be prearranged. And when it's not, I'm very, very angry. Which is why I have an arrangement with the Cockneys in the morning. I always go to the same Cockney to get the same coffee every day because he knows how to make it for me, you know?
There we go.
Yeah. So yeah, Dear Cockney People will not be much like Dear White People because I don't know how to make film, and Justin Simeon, who made Dear White People, does know how to make a film, and I thought it was quite good. What did you think?
Yes, I really like this movie quite a lot. It's one of those films, and it doesn't happen very often, where before it gets released, there are conversations happening about it, and you'll notice that this movie's IMDb score is a little bit lower than it probably should be, down at about 6.1, I think it is. And that is because it was review bombed constantly before it even came out by angry white right wingers, because they basically saw the trailer and thought, oh no, it's people saying white people are bad. Let's not be nice about this film. But in reality, I think it takes a very subtle look at racism in a lot of different ways, framing it around an event that very much could be a real life event, and in fact pretty much is.
Yeah, and in a way that's kind of the point of it, isn't it? The title and the way that it's set up is designed exactly to annoy those kind of stupid people who don't really understand the nuance of these kind of issues and are going to respond to it in that way. That's exactly what the film and the director want you to do, so that, and that's good publicity, so well done.
Yes, yeah. And I think it does tick all of those boxes very well in terms of, you know, poking the bear, the slow, drooling bear that is white racism, to get it to slovenly try and pour a movie that's much more intelligent and erudite than it could ever be.
The angry polar bear trying to catch a fish.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So this movie revolves around a group of black students at a prestigious university in America. And it goes through their lives and their interactions and the way that race plays a role in their day-to-day lives as students. And it all culminates in a big racist party by a bunch of rich white people.
And that doesn't mean a party where the racism is okay. It means that the party is racist and it's bad.
Yes, yeah. It's not a pleasant place to be.
It's basically a blackface party.
Yes, yeah. And it's kind of framed as racism often is in this day and age. It's framed as a free speech issue. I think this movie is one of the best films I've seen at talking about race in the so-called post-racism age, where you'll often hear people saying, oh, racism isn't around anymore. You know, equal rights and everything like that. And you see it about any kind of marginalized group. They always say, oh, well, that doesn't happen anymore. It's like, yes, it does. And it happens in subtle ways, and it happens in ways that you can't see.
Yeah, it's like just because, you know, white people and black people can drink from the same fountains now and rent the same houses or whatever, there aren't signs saying no blacks, no dogs, no Irish. It doesn't mean that racism is over. But a lot of white people would tell you that it does.
Yes, and that partly comes down to the lack of understanding that racism is an innate part of a lot of the cultures that have been created due to their long-standing racist ideologies that formed them in the first place. And this movie, it talks a little bit about that. It talks a little bit about how the default in society still isn't equality, that our so-called meritocracy is not truly a meritocracy because there are still these innate differences in the way that people interact with one another.
Yeah, not remotely, but at the same time it does make some bold statements about race and about racism, but at the same time it's more exploratory. It's a film that's very, very keen on exploring you know, the meaning of black culture and white culture, but also student culture and how all those things come together and the complexity and the nuance of all of that stuff, with the history and the various contexts that it has. And I think it does that in a very good way without actually going too hard on any one message. I think it's very, very good. It's well put together in that way because it's still a very funny and very watchable film. Like, what's really good about it is that it works as a standard campus comedy, but it does have all of this depth in talking about race as well.
Yeah, and that's exactly why I thought of this film when we were watching The New Romantic, in that it's another film that takes a very complex issue, in fact, probably a much more complex issue, of racism at universities. And it does it in a way that's both funny, like you said, it's both funny and it's intelligent and it's thought-provoking. And like you said, it is more of a discussion piece. It's not about finding the answers here, but instead trying to convey experiences and try and sort of discuss the issue of, you know, bro culture and the way that kind of white bro culture is an easy outlet for racism to manifest.
Yeah, and I thought that was what it was strongest at. It wasn't really plot driven either. You know, you knew that the party was going to happen and whatever, but it wasn't really about this kind of huge conflict and resolution, because actually you got a lot of quite a few different people and a lot of different plots. Actually, it was more about characterization. I mean, Sam is essentially the main character, and she does have her nice little moment at the end where she holds hands with the white fuckboy whose name I've forgotten.
That's his name, isn't it?
White fuckboy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I couldn't remember his name, but he's the TA, and they have this sort of on-off romance, but it's clear that he really likes her, and he's white, and they kind of get together at the end, but it's not like a big emotional moment. It's just kind of, she has a little bit of talk about her dad being ill, which I actually wasn't 100% sure that was necessary, but it was still kind of a nice little MacGuffin to kind of make it just a little bit emotional at the end, and I liked that, but that wasn't what the whole thing was building up to. The whole film was just showing that all of these kind of various tensions are happening across the campus. They come to a head, boom, there's a bit of fallout. That's it. Here are some issues that I would like you to think about. I hope you had fun.
Yes. And I think that the role of her father does play a part in the character piece, because I think one of the best things that this movie does, and you know, we're two white people, so I'm not sure whether our discussion of this can be entirely relevant here. I've always been a strong proponent of groups having a more finite discussion about art that revolves around them, which is why, sort of, you know, I talk a lot about mental health. So when it comes to things about mental health, I feel like I am the be all and end all authority on the subject.
Yeah. But at the same time, you're always open to discussion. You're always going to actually want to have a dialogue with people and to hear other people's perspectives. And if someone has a unique perspective on it that is related to their condition or some characteristic of their being, you're going to recognize that it's important for them to, for their voice to be heard, right?
Yes, exactly. But I do feel as though, you know, but there's only so far we can take it on this as a couple of white men. Yeah. But I think one of the things that I really liked about this movie was the way that it talked about these characters being held up as an image for society. So with Sam, she, you know, she's seen by a lot of people, even some of the other members of the Black Student Union, that she is this you know, she's this figurehead almost. She's this battering ram to go through and create these discussion points. So by allowing her to then have these moments where she talks about her personal life, which is never really discussed by anybody in the film, nobody really cares about that. They only care about her as this figurehead. I think that was quite an intelligent, tender way to show that there is actually humanity underneath people, even though society and even the people that supposedly support them don't always see it that way.
Especially people who willingly want to be involved in student politics.
Yeah. And I think it does that for everybody in the film. You've got various people that are supposedly these archetypes or that fail to fit into the archetypes, and so they don't necessarily feel as though there is a place for them in society anywhere. Because they are our society, with its very heavy focus on race, is trying to pigeonhole people into places that they don't necessarily fit. And I think that was one of the most interesting things that this film did, talking about the pressures of black people fitting into certain stereotypes.
Yeah, and especially where that pressure on campus comes from as well. And especially, you know, in the context of prestigious institutions and stuff, it's a really big deal in the US that it's like an Ivy fictionalized version of an Ivy League school, and, you know, everything like that, all this kind of pressure to be somebody or to do exceptional things or whatever that's on that campus. And it's like there's the Hall of Residence, which is all black and stuff, and it's like, if you don't fit in there, well, then are you truly black? And that's what the character Lionel deals with. You know, it's really, yeah, that side of it was really interesting. I thought his character was one of the more interesting ones as well, because sometimes I liked him and sometimes I didn't, because at first you felt like he was sort of, he was sneaking around a bit and trying to write this story, and he seemed a bit wet. But then when it gets to the party, he starts smashing shit up and rapping and stuff, and you're like, yes, that's the Lionel I want to see.
Yes, and I felt that Lionel's character, I think, was one of the most interesting in the film. And he's pretty much, I've watched this film a few times, and he's always my favourite. I mean, I think all of the lead characters in this film, I think all of them are fascinating in different ways. But he, as an outsider, where he says that, you know, he doesn't feel like he fits into the black community because he listens to Mumford and Sons and watches Robert Altman movies. his place as this outsider on that culture, you know, I think is fascinating. And you can see that he's trying to find this place to fit in, and he's trying to find some kind of acceptance somewhere, which leads him to pursuing this kind of character study, this kind of... But, you know, again, we've got a very good example of student journalism that is far better than what you'd probably get in the UK. I don't know what it's like in America. Well, in America, is it that much better?
Well, I feel like it is. I feel like they all have really established, like, newspapers, especially in the prestigious place. They all have really established papers that everyone reads, and it's like a really big deal. Or even like the radio. It seems like in this way, everyone's listening to her radio show. So I appreciated that as a former radio person, as you know. Maybe I should have called my show Dear Posh People, being at the university that we were at. But yeah, all of that. And yeah, student politics as well, I find is really interesting. Like in the US, it seems much more focused on people who like want to be future leaders and stuff. Although I guess in the UK it's the same, but I think I feel like people at our university who wanted to be student politics were just kind of a lot of oddballs. And some of them, you know, because you get like a year off. I don't know if it's the same in the US. I don't think it is. But in the UK, or at least in our context, wasn't it that like you get a year, if you were the president of the Students' Union, that was like a year away from your studies and it was like a job?
Well, I think you generally did it after you'd graduated, didn't you?
Yeah, but there was a guy who'd been doing it for 4 or 5 years and was like in his mid-20s and still hadn't finished his degree.
Oh, really? Because most of the people I know who were like presidents of universities... I won't name the name, but
you know the guy who I mean, right?
I know who you mean, yeah.
We wrote a song about him and what he did in the bath.
We did. But at other universities, some of the people that I know who've gone into student politics, when they've become presidents and things like that, it's often been after they've graduated. Where they then do it afterwards. So they've made a, you know, they've made an impression over the course of their degree, and then afterwards they stay on to, you know, look out for student interests and then move on afterwards. So I'm not sure how it works in the States. It seemed as though it was done alongside studies.
Yeah. I definitely got that impression, and that seemed kind of cool. And then you got a boy Troy, who is the dean's son, who likes to smoke weed and write jokes.
Yes, and again, you know, I think, and what I love about this film is the way that it does sort of like set up all of these characters in a way that you think they are, and then it kind of pulls the rug out from under you a little bit in terms of like what they genuinely want to do. And with Troy, he's got all of these family pressures from his dad, who's the dean. But in reality, it's clear that he doesn't really want to pursue any of that.
Yeah, and it makes you realize that people are complicated, you know? No one is just their race. No one is just their gender. No one is just this, that, and whatever. People always have different desires and want to do different things. But people, yeah, as you say, often get pigeonholed, especially if you do a radio show called Dear White People and it's all about race, then that's the only aspect of your character, when actually she's like a really talented filmmaker as well. But that's recognized by her relationship with White Fuckboy, who's the TA in her class.
And what I find so refreshing about this film is that in a normal movie like this, you wouldn't get this level of characterization. And so having this level of characterization in a kind of university set film, it's so good to see such well-rounded characters here. It's great. And even the more sort of like generic, I suppose, or more straightforward characters, like terrible young racists.
Black
Mitch. All of them have got a little something about them that makes them feel more interesting and more human than your usual suspects in these kind of films.
Yeah, for sure. No one's a cardboard cutout.
No. I think it really strikes home because it's the kind of thing that does happen in real life. So I don't know if you remember at university, there were parties.
The blackface scandal that actually happened in more or less the same way.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
It does happen, this. And so, you know, a lot of people were saying about how outrageous this film was, but this is quite clearly just a it's a retelling of real world events. This happens all
really?
The time.
People thought it was outrageous? Like, in what way? Like, I don't remember hearing much about this film at the time. I remember hearing about it, but I don't remember hearing about any commentary or whatever. And I actually heard more about the TV series that was based on it when that came onto Netflix, which I haven't seen either. But what did people think it was outrageous about?
People were furious about the fact that it was called Dear White People.
Wow.
Yeah. The Wambulance was cool for online.
Someone
racists.
Need a Wambulance.
And yeah, so people were furious about that, and then the trailer came out and the promo stuff came out, which was generally just like the snippets of the Dear White People radio show. And people were calling it out for being racist against white people and saying this is an outrage, blah blah blah. It was quite prevalent online. If you look at, well, I think the comments section on IMDb has now disappeared. I think they quite wisely got rid of it a few years ago. But even if you look at the reviews on there, that are the written reviews, a lot of them are furious white people saying about how mean it is to white people and how white people can't catch a break. And that was a very...
The only response to that is just, wah.
Yeah, it's that or to push someone down a well, let's be honest with you.
Snowflakes.
Yeah, all these white snowflakes, literally snowflakes, all of you, get out.
Yep.
And that did become a little bit of an online backlash storm. It was in the days before... that kind of stuff happened all the time. It was before Star Wars The Last Jedi. It was before Captain Marvel.
This is happening just like every single day about everything, isn't it?
Yeah, so it was even pre-Gamergate when this was going on, because it was a long time before the film came out. It was actually quite a while between like the trailer and the film actually releasing. So There was something of an online storm about this movie, which I don't think necessarily hurt it very much, because it kind of, like you said, it kind of boosted its vision and it boosted how many people could find it.
Whilst also proving exactly its own reason for existence before anyone had even seen it.
Exactly. And that's what's beautiful about it, is that the angry internet nerd reaction to this film, it just proved its point perfectly, and that was something great. But it was still quite unnerving to see, particularly coming off the back of, you know, it wasn't that long after we'd been to uni, so it wasn't that long after like blackface parties, which were, you know, rightly condemned by a lot of people. But as this
still happening,
as this movie pointed out, they made an event like that, and over 100 people still came along. People still take part in these kind of things, and you know, over the footage of the end of this movie, they show the real world examples of this kind of thing happening.
Yeah. So yeah, from that point of view, I think it's actually quite a realistic film, even though it's very very funny and it's a comedy, and a lot of it is set up and played for laughs. The conversations that people are having and the dialogue is really really strong and really really. The kind of conversations that you can hear every day on social media, if you look, probably not very far. Stuff like when they're sitting, I think it's Troy, he's sitting with the white kids and they're all going like, and he says to them, oh, you have country, he's like, why can't they say the N-word? And he's like, oh, we have country, you have country clubs, we get to say the N-word and stuff.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
There's some amazing lines in this movie. It's really good. And some of them come from, like, you know, you've got these perfect examples of racist stuff being said by people, and then these rebuttals. And I think one of my favorite things about this movie is the way that they mildly reference Gremlins as being a racist film. And I think there has actually been plenty of discussions over the years about Gremlins as an allegory for racism and as an allegory for other cultures entering white neighborhoods.
Absolutely, yeah.
And so, you know, that even in those little quips, there are moments of discussion about race that are worth having. It's a great script. I mean, really tight. Every line of dialogue in this movie, and there's a lot of dialogue in this film, every line of it is worthwhile.
Yeah, and the girl who like has a relatively small role but still is a big part of it in the end, is it Coco? I think the one who really wants to be on
Coco,
TV.
Yeah.
And she's just like inexplicably really wants to be on TV, and she's like a sort of minor YouTuber, and she's talking to the guy who's there's weirdly a guy in the background who's sort of producing a documentary or looking for people to star in a campus reality TV show, and it's a plot thread that doesn't really go anywhere until the last shot where he's with the dean and the president, and he's like, I could get you a lot of money, and they're like, oh, tell me more. But she's like a YouTuber, and he's saying to her, you know, or I think someone said to her, what are your chances? And she's like, we live in a world where there's a Big Mama's House 3. I don't stand a chance. Which tickled me.
Yeah, it's great.
And
it's
a reference to Coming to America as well.
There's a reference to Coming to America.
And he's like, it's from White Fuckboy, and he's talking to her about films, or I can't remember the context, but he's like, can I at least get credit for a solid Coming to America reference? And she's like, nah.
And again, I think there's a, I think that character works so well because you've got, you know, that you've got these people that view it through the lens of cinema instead of viewing it through the lens of a real world event. And life isn't as easy as a movie. You know, there's complexities to it, there's difficulties to it, and there's nothing as clear cut. And I think that's something that this film does incredibly well. Is it shows you those blurred lines, and
that's
it really,
nothing to do with Robin Thicke.
Nothing to do with Robin Thicke, I might point out. But it shows you those blurred lines, and it shows you that it's not easy to answer these questions that this film is posing.
No, and it doesn't ask you to answer them either. It just asks you to think, doesn't it? Whilst also being entertained.
Exactly. It's a great discussion piece that will also make you laugh and then make you think about it at 2 a.m. and go, oh God, we're really fucked, aren't we?
Yeah. Because actually, probably, it may be cynical, but things probably haven't really progressed or gotten any better since this film has come out. If anything, since this film, the kind of social media discourse and the trollification of discourse and culture that has happened since then has just taken all of that stuff and just really amplified it, hasn't it? It's all, oh, everyone's taking away free speech and no platforming on campus. And then, like, if there was to be, like, a blackface party, you know that just, like, all of those discussions would be happening over and over, going like, oh, is this okay? I don't know. Is it free speech? And like loads of fucking hand-wringing about it. And no, it's not okay because it's blackface and that's massively racist. Just no, don't do it. Go and do something else.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I don't know if it's necessarily got any worse in recent years, but I think that you're right that the discussion has become louder, and it makes me think of I can't remember where I saw it, but someone said it's probably on Twitter. A lot of stuff I see that I like is on Twitter. In fact, a lot of the stuff that I see that I hate is also on Twitter.
I was going to say, that's exactly it. I see a lot of stuff that I really like and a lot of stuff that just makes me want to die.
Exactly. That's your tagline for Twitter, Jack, if that is your real name.
At Jack.
But I saw something.
He has got the cold, dead eyes of a killer, that man.
but I saw something. It was probably on Twitter. It might have been elsewhere. Someone said, I wish we could go back to the good old days where the people that were marginalized didn't complain as loudly. and that's kind of the point, isn't it? Is, you know, we're having those discussions now. Does that mean that things have got worse, or does it mean that people are just actually talking about it?
Yes,
I think that there has been this move, this kind of vocal backlash against rights and this backlash against inclusion and against diversity. But I don't necessarily think that that backlash is actually pushing things in the wrong direction. I just think I hope it's the death throes of a bunch of morons.
Yeah. No. What is good about it is that social media and this level of kind of discourse has given a voice to people who didn't have a voice before. So we're hearing about all of this stuff where we weren't hearing about it before. And that's definitely a really, really good thing. But the problem is that we're also hearing the response to it from stupid twats.
Yes, exactly. And
that
response
is being
thing.
Amplified by the media and by the social media platforms as part of the kind of algorithmification of culture as well. It means that all of that bullshit's being amplified too.
You've got to have a discourse, TM. A discourse is all. There is no life. There is only discourse. You've got to hear both sides. Even if one side is a drooling, angry man wearing a KKK outfit, you still have to listen to him.
Why won't you debate me? But it's, exactly. It's the same as how
my frozen
on the BBC
are being infringed.
It's the same as how on the BBC every single debate on the BBC without exception now is here's a climate scientist with 30 years of 30 years experience and 10 PhDs who is an expert in the subject. Here's the head of the Flat Earth Society, and let's give them equal weight and equal billing.
Yeah, or let's invite someone who ran for the council under UKIP back onto Question Time as a member of the public for the fourth time.
Yeah, exactly. You know, after inviting Nigel Farage onto Question Time all the fucking time when he's never even been an MP.
Yeah. So I think in terms of where we are at the moment in society, we need to get over the idea that discourse is everything and that dialogue between two sides is everything, because not everything is equally weighted, you know. Don't give time to massive racists. Don't give time to horrible bigots. Don't give time to people who think that vaccines are a bad idea or that the earth is flat or that climate change isn't real.
Yeah. No, dialogue is a good thing. Conversation is a good thing. I mean, just probably 10, 15 minutes ago, I was saying how great it is that this film prompts a dialogue and depicts dialogue between black and white culture in a really, really interesting way, and between campus culture and between people. And all of that stuff is very, very good. But none of those people are flat earthers. The point is, you do not owe you do not owe flat earthers your time. You do not owe racists your time.
No, exactly. And I think,
and their voices do not deserve to be amplified either, because they're saying stupid shit.
No, precisely. Don't give stupid people a megaphone. They will only shout shit jokes out of it.
But enough about Live at the Apollo. I couldn't think of a comedian I didn't like to finish that joke.
So you just went with all comedians. And so this movie ends with the party, and the party itself is a really great metaphor for racism as a whole, I suppose, because it starts off just as this kind of very personal attempt to take down one person, but doing so in a very cruel way. When they realize that it's a bad idea, it's already too late, and it has been overrun with extremely racist stuff that was never necessarily their initial intent.
Yeah, people wearing masks and, you know, white people rapping and stuff.
White people should never rap.
There's a guy rapping. He raps like Milo Yiannopoulos, the guy in the film, before Lionel pushes him off the stage and does his own little rap.
Why did he have to remind me that Milo Yiannopoulos exists?
I listened to his gospel song. It was very, very bad.
In my mind, he was just lying down quietly in a room sobbing for the rest of his life, and now you've just reminded me that he's probably somewhere doing something stupid and getting paid money by idiots to do it.
And I heard he's now trying to make it in Australia.
I mean, good luck to him. I definitely don't hope that some kind of poisonous animal bites him.
I was gonna say, the good news is that Australia has the most species of animal that can kill you, and he's quite stupid, so he probably would just walk up to some kind of killer cobra and let it bite him.
Should we tell him that only cucks don't let themselves get bitten by spiders?
Yeah, or that, you know, if he truly supports free speech, he has to box against a kangaroo that's twice his size and lose.
oh dear. So this movie, it's quite a shocking end, but it's the kind of thing that does happen. And
yeah, other white fuckboy, who is the president's son, who is a massive douche and looks like all of the kind of right-wing Richard Spencer types rolled into one young bastard. He's great. It's a very good performance as that kind of role. He's very, very hateable, and he beats up Lionel. But before he does, Lionel kisses him after he calls him a fag. Which is a great moment.
Yes, yeah, and that's another aspect of this movie is, you know, you've got that kind of intersectionality built into it, which is very rarely looked at in film and very rarely looked at in media at all. Often when you get a movie that's about a specific subject, like everybody's least favorite Oscar winner, apart from perhaps now that this year has rolled around, before that it was Crash, which everybody hated.
Yeah, I was going to say, everyone's really down on Green Book right now.
Yes, they are. I haven't seen it, so I can't speak on the matter. But from what I've heard, it's not a good discussion about racism. And kind of is having allegories of Crash, which was the movie before this that caused the biggest sort of upset.
This is Crash with the one that's got 1,000 plots and stuff.
Yes, not the Crash that's about people getting turned on by car crashes.
Not the sexy one.
The good
J.G. Ballard based.
No, not the J.G. Ballard film. The one about racism. And whereas, you know, whereas Dear White People, it has, you know, it talks about things beyond just a simplistic construct of what racism is.
Yes, it's not black and white, despite the title.
I will never forgive you for that pun, Paddy.
but yeah, there's some homophobia thrown in there as well. And actually, Lionel's homosexuality is explored in quite a nuanced way, but it's quite subtle as well. There's only a couple of scenes where you see he's got this relationship with the newspaper editor who wants in the story, but then they're kissing as well. And it's like there's a little bit of romance for him, so you feel good about that. And then he uses it, as in that context where he's already being racially abused, to just bring in that element of intersectionality there. And it's not trying to make a huge point, but it's trying to say, here's something that you should think about.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And again, it's making you think. I mean, I know that sounds like a cliche, but this movie makes you think.
And it
makes
you think. Make you think.
Hashtag makes you think. And it does that. And it's very effective at doing that. And it doesn't give you the answers. Because, hey, if a movie had the answers to casual racism, we'd probably be in a much better place as a society.
Yes. The Oscars would be very, very different, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Oh, dear. Speaking of the Oscars.
Yeah, should we talk about
Should we talk about the Oscars a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Everyone hates Green Book. I haven't seen it. It looks all right. You know, it looks like a perfectly passable, enjoyable story about some race stuff and whatever. So I will maybe see that when it comes onto the TV. But yeah, is it a Best Picture candidate? Probably not.
I think it's a movie.
I'm judging it without having seen it, obviously.
From what I've heard, it's a movie about how white people can overcome racism. And nah, mate, I can't be bothered with that kind of film anymore. Yeah. Particularly one that the family of the person involved has said this is a load of bullshit. I do not have time for that. So I'll probably watch it at some point, but it's not on my
when you
list.
Feel like you need a white savior narrative.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean,
or if you didn't get enough from La La Land of a white man saving jazz.
Whereas, you know, you had movies like Black Klansman, which I don't know if that was. I think that might have. I mean, I did love The Favourite, but I think Black Klansman might have been my favourite movie of the nominees, and I really wish it had won.
Yeah, I still haven't seen it, but as I said, I've read the book, which is amazing.
Yeah, and so Spike Lee did get his Oscar because he got Best Adapted Screenplay. Great. Olivia Colman won. Brilliant.
Yeah,
loving
she
it.
Deserved that for The Favourite. Absolutely. That's a very, very good film, which we discussed just a few episodes ago. But yeah, it cleaned up. But
it
not
did.
Quite. It didn't get everything, but it got
it didn't get everything. Black Panther won a fair bit. Won,
yeah.
What, 3 Oscars in the end, was it?
So we got costume design, production design. The ones that only nerds care about.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's great that, you know, Marvel has actually won Oscars for something now. Marvel Studios has won Oscars for something. So all those people who said that Black Panther was just SJW nonsense, get in the bin. It's got Oscars.
Yeah.
You know, didn't get Oscars? Any other Marvel Studios movie?
Yeah. You know what didn't get Oscars? Anything racist apart from Green Book.
But yeah, so it was an interesting ceremony. There were some head scratchers there.
I haven't seen Roma either. Have you watched Roma?
No, I keep meaning to watch it, but it looks like it's a very deep
movie.
I've
watched the first half hour of it, and it was quite enjoyable. I just I then had to go out and didn't finish it, but I will be finishing it at some point. And I was quite enjoying it. It had a really, really nice, languid pace and was really, really well shot. But I've heard mixed things. Some people were bored by it.
Yeah, well, some people are bored by good stuff, aren't they? Not every movie has to be Transformers.
Yeah.
People. God. You know who's not won an Oscar? Transformers.
Optimus Prime.
Optimus Prime didn't win Best Actor.
How many awards have you got, Optimus Prime? I bet even like Skeletor's got more than you.
Couldn't even save your home planet, Optimus Prime. How do you think you can win an Oscar if you can't save your home planet?
Yeah, what can you do? You could turn into a car. Great. You know, did you make a whole film? Did you record a song with Bradley Cooper? No, you didn't.
I mean, he literally can change into a car. Can he turn into Queen Anne? No, he can't. Get in the bin. You're not a true actor.
Yeah. Did he look like a badger? No.
Owen Wilson can turn into a car, for God's sake.
What's Owen Wilson up to at the moment?
I don't know. He's probably going to be in the next Anderson movie, won't he? He's always in those.
That's a guaranteed job for him and Bill Murray and all of those. All that sort. They just sit around waiting to get the call from Wes, don't they?
Jason Schwartzman is just there, chilling out, playing Pokemon. He gets a little call. It's like, oh, hello, is it time to make another movie again?
Yeah, yeah, I'll do it. And he's also making records as well.
He is with his
band, Coconut Records.
Coconut Records.
Yeah, good name. Speaking of Pokemon, have you seen the new trailer for Detective Pikachu?
I have. It's not the only Pokemon news to come out, though.
I know. There's a whole bunch of other stuff, isn't there? What's the new thing?
We've got three new Pokemon have just been announced for the next Pokemon games.
Oh, good. More ridiculous Pokemon.
Because they're the starter Pokemon, they look like Pokemon instead of like something thought up in a fever dream.
I don't want that.
Well, if it's any consolation, when they evolve, they probably turn into something completely bizarre. But at the moment, you've got a rabbit, you've got a lizard, and you've got a monkey. You've got a tree monkey, a water lizard, and a fire rabbit.
Fair enough. Sounds pretty standard.
Yeah, I'm all over them. I'm happy. I think I know which one I'm going to pick when I play it.
But Detective Pikachu, I don't know why, but I'm really weirdly excited for that film. I think it looks hilarious and extremely good. And it's a weird kind of combination of enjoying present day, like really, really good animation. And I think we're living in a golden age of animation and of films that mix live action with animation and stuff in a really, really good way. Crossed with my nostalgia for playing Pokemon as a child and being so into it that the trailer just pushed all of those buttons for me. And I'm really, really excited for it.
Yeah, I think it's doing a really good job of combining those two factors, and they're clearly aiming for that. So obviously, you know, they're going to be going for kids to go and watch this movie, but there's also going to be a lot of people of our generation who go and see it because it hits all those nostalgia buttons, even down to the fact that he's voiced by Ryan Reynolds. There's a quality to that that really appeals to people of our generation who grew up playing the Pokemon game. So actually, yeah, I'm quite excited about it as well. I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think it looks really, really good. And yeah, very funny.
So that
should win all of the Oscars next year.
Yeah, where's Detective Pikachu's Oscar?
Yeah, they should have like preemptively just given it one already, just to make sure that everyone knows that it's going to be the best film of 2019.
Yes.
Yeah, so then we had Best Animated Feature, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I have not seen that, have you?
No, but I've heard amazing things about it.
And again, everyone I know who's seen that said that it was really good.
Yep. So, you know, we've got some good winners here. And I'm quite pleased to see Disney/Pixar not winning the Best Animated Feature, because it seems like they win it all the time.
Yeah, yeah. The Pixar got Best Animated Short for Bao, which is really good. I have seen that. I haven't seen any of the others, so I can't comment on whether it actually deserves it, but it's good.
Bao-ulence.
Yeah, exactly. The Oscars are bad and everyone hates them, and boo to the Oscars. We should just do our own awards.
We should. Best robot who can transform into a car.
Yep.
Bumblebee, not Optimus Prime. Mate, you don't even win the best Transformer category.
Yeah. Best Skeletor, not Skeletor.
Yeah, we should do our own Oscars.
We actually should. That'd be good. Should it be an annual thing? We go back through every film that we've watched that year and go through it?
Yeah, well, that's a really good idea. We should do that.
Yeah. Shall we actually next week do our 2018 Oscars? Or like long lists? We'll come up with, if we each come up with two or three for each category, and then we can go from there.
That actually sounds like a really good idea. Should we do this? Should we do our own award ceremony?
So for 2018, just the films that we watched in 2018.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good. This is what the people want. See, I tend to think mostly that awards are bullshit, but if I ever win one, I'll obviously change my mind.
Yeah, I'm going to be up there crying, saying thank my mum and dad, and we did it, baby. We did it.
I'd like to thank God.
I'd like to thank Olivia Colman for giving me the power to win this award with her fantastic performance in The Favourite.
Yep. I'd like to thank Prince. Everything.
I'd like to thank Prince for giving me an album free with the mail on Sunday.
you're never gonna let me forget that shit, are you? Prince did it. I didn't do it, but I feel so like personally affronted that you keep mentioning it, that I feel like I did it. I feel like went to the newsagents and affixed the CD to every copy of the Mail on Sunday.
It's because you feel guilt for it, and rightly so. You're enabling the Mail on Sunday, Paddy.
Next time I see you, I'm going to push you in a lake. Just like Prince pushes his girlfriend into Lake Minnetonka.
And you're going to drive off on your motorbike.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. So have you got anything else to say about Dear White People?
No, I think we've covered everything. This is a film that I very much enjoyed. I think it's very, very good, and I think everyone should watch it. If you like the kind of films that we like and deal with the kind of... If you're down with what we're down with, then I'm pretty sure that you'll enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's really good.
Have you seen any of the TV series, actually?
I haven't, no, because I wanted to show my other half the movie first before we watched it.
Ah, and this was the so she hadn't seen it?
No.
What did she make of it?
She very much enjoyed it as well. Thought it was great.
Excellent. Yeah, so how should we... you don't have anything else to say, right?
No, the only thing I'd say is that, according to trivia, the parody of The Birth of a Nation that Sam makes for her student film class...
The Rebirth of a Nation.
Yes, The Rebirth of a Nation. It has parallels with something that Spike Lee had when he was a student at NYU's Graduate Film School. Where he was forced to watch Birth of a Nation, where it was taught as a milestone in technical development of cinema rather than about its racism.
Yeah, terrible.
So he made a short film that responded to it, which did not go down very well, and he was nearly kicked out of NYU.
This made me realise as well that I haven't seen Do the Right Thing, and I feel like I need to watch that as well.
Oh, well, there we go. We should go on a Spike Lee. Marathon.
Yeah. Have some Lee time.
So that was the only thing. I think it's quite interesting the way that it has those parallels to real life events, not just with the parties, but with the sort of individual moments along the way as well.
Yeah. So yeah, it's very, very good. Yeah. You can tell that it has these influences, but it's not stealing from anyone. It's a love and tribute.
Yeah, it's great. Really impressive film. How are we gonna score this?
How many? So you're hosting the blackface party, and the black student union shows up. How many bottles on the bar are they gonna smash before you intervene?
Oh, that's a good one.
Out of 20. How long are you gonna let them get away with this shit?
So for me, it's gonna be 17 bottles.
Nice.
I like this film a lot. I think it has a real interesting discussion around it. I think it's a film that everybody should watch. Really great film.
Yeah, I think I would agree. I think I would give it a 17 as well. It's definitely, it's up there, you know. Very, very high score and deserving of it. It's good. I think I'm going to be thinking about it for a while, and I would watch it again as well.
Yeah, so I've watched it a few times.
Which I don't often say, actually, do I?
No.
More often you catch me saying, oh, I'm not going to watch it again. But I would watch that again, for sure.
Yeah, and for me at least, this is a film that gets, it's just as good on every watch. Really, really great movie.
Yeah, and that's a real testament to its greatness.
Cool. So are we going to be doing our Oscars next week then?
Yeah. But we should still watch a film anyway.
Cool. Okie dokie.
We've had a request from my dad. He wants us to watch The Apartment from 1960. And I feel like we haven't been back to the 60s for quite some time. So it's probably a good idea. And I've never seen it. It looks like quite an interesting one. Produced and directed by Billy Wilder, starring Jack Lemmon and Shirley MacLaine. It looks like quite a fun one.
Nice, awesome. Little, I don't think
nice
I've seen it.
Trip back in time.
Excellent stuff.
Yeah, but yeah, we can also do our Oscars as well.
Awesome.
Sweet. Right. Do you have anything else you want to talk about?
No, that's everything
already,
for me.
We've already covered the Oscars, haven't we?
We have indeed. Yeah.
Boo to the Oscars. Boo.
Boo.
All right. Well, yeah, we'll leave it there. But thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed this and that you enjoyed Dear White People. If you think that the title is provocative, then go away. We don't want to hear from you. but we do like to hear from you and to get your opinions, recommendations, etc. You can email us, bigboysdontcrypodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet us at bigboysdontpod. Always love to hear from you.
Yes, let us know what you thought of it. Also let us know if there was any racist parties at your university, because you're not alone.
Yeah, for sure. We can talk about those if you want. I think there was a guy at R1 dressed as Flavor Flav, wasn't there?
Was there? Jesus.
I believe there was a photo of him in the Idiot Times, whatever the paper was called. I can't remember.
See, I don't often think that people should just be left in a dark room until they die, but sometimes you've got to make adjustments, don't you?
Yeah. Well, at least he'd be able to tell the time.
Right, on that note.
All right, we'll be back next week to talk about The Apartment.
All right, bye.
Bye.